All right, good morning. Welcome back. This is the I Am Sorry About Last Night podcast. My name is Tom. Part of the Social Podcast Network, www.socialpodcastnetwork.com. Local folks doing local podcasts. Good morning. How is everybody? It is Saturday, June, what's the number? 12th. June 12th. It is a beautiful, overcast, rainy morning. Beautiful, overcast, rainy morning. Very excited. I love, you know, I'm big into rain. I'm big into summer rain. I feel like we've been a little deficient. So it always feels good to me when we get some rain. And actually, you know, I don't know if, I think I've shared this. I was in the golf course industry for quite a while. So me and rain have quite a relationship. Quite a relationship. You know, being in the industry, especially in the Mid-Atlantic region, that's what we call this area, the Mid-Atlantic region. You know, we live in an area that's very hot. It's very humid. But it's also very cold. So it's hard to know what to do as far as when it comes to growing grass. You know, we're a little too far north to grow like a Bermuda grass, if anybody knows what grasses are. Bermuda, it's a creeping grass. And we're too far south to grow comfortably to grow like a bent grass because it gets too hot. Bent grass is a fine, you know, if you ever watch golf on television, the greens where they putt, that's bent grass usually. The tee box is usually a bent grass. It's a fine grass. Fills in. You know, you take a divot, fills in, grows back in. Creeping bent grass. So what ends up happening is you really have to babysit it. Oh, my God, what a nightmare. I used to be a grass babysitter for the most part. You know, in the summer you have to cool it down. It's called syringing if you're super interested. So, you know, anytime we'd get rain, it'd be always be nice. But, you know, rain here in the middle of summer, you know, super hot and humid is not always good either. It looks good. It looks on paper like it would be good, but in the end, it's too much rain, too much water, too much moisture. Grass doesn't like moisture either. Actually, grass is probably pretty cool with it, but when you stress it out, right? When you cut it down so short, it's like, dude, I don't particularly like this. You know, it's like life. You know? Yeah. We're all pretty good, right? Until, you know, we get pushed or poked or, you know, maneuvered or manipulated in a certain way. And then, unfortunately, sometimes we snap or we lash out. So, you know, the point of this whole story was, you know, we got some rain. It feels good. I would consider this an actual rain. Sometimes we'll get, you know, like a shower. People are like, all right, we just had rain. We're good. A lot of times that rain didn't even do anything. You know, wet the leaves, evaporated. But I think we got a nice rain last night, so everything looks green. Everything looks happy. So, you know, it is Saturday. Not much going on this morning. But, man, what a week. What a freaking week. I have had a week, and it's been perfectly fine, but a lot of shit going on around me. A person close to me, person in my life just recently out drinking, right? And it's been a while since I've had, the last time I had a person like this in my life go out drinking was this same person. And, you know, I talk about it. It's interesting to be on both sides of this. You know, I talk about, you know, we admit we are powerless over alcohol, that our lives have become unmanageable. That's obvious, right? Well, it's obvious because that's how it's written. We read it. That's what it says. But we admitted we are powerless over alcohol, that our lives have become unmanageable to everybody else. That's it. That's actually, I think, what ends up happening. We do not become unhappy with our unmanageable life. It's everybody else does. And this person is a perfect example of that. You know, I'm going to keep it super vague because I want to keep this person anonymous because, you know, I'm not here to embarrass, but it's a great lesson. This person, I saw this person the other day and I started talking to him and I could smell alcohol. I could smell the alcohol. And I said to this person, I go, have you been drinking? And the person said, no, why? And I go, I smell alcohol. And the person said, well, I just had lunch. And I go, okay, well, I tell you what, if you have been drinking, I would have a mint or two. And if you haven't been drinking, I apologize, right? And I can tell you the shame and fucking guilt that rolled over my body that day. I felt so bad that I asked this person about it. You know, sort of my business, sort of not my business. Sort of my business, though. Sort of my business enough that I was in, you know, that I asked, right? But then, you know. I tend to think sometimes since I'm an alcoholic and that I can't drink that people that aren't alcoholics can't have a drink, right? I mean, it probably wouldn't be the best move, even if you're not an alcoholic, to be drinking during the day, you know, like around work time. But I think there was a lot of people that used to do that, what they call it, the two martini lunch. And, you know, people used to have, you know, drinks at lunch. It wouldn't work for me. It would be very bad. It would be, honestly, if I'm even considering drinking a drink at lunch, things have gone really bad. But, you know, who am I, right? I'm not the fucking, you know, I'm not the damn drink police. So, you know, I was like, hey, you know, if you haven't, fine. But I felt really bad about it. And I had to call, you know, I left here. And I had to reach out to a friend in the program, and I just shared with them what had happened. I said, you know, this person, I thought I smelled alcohol, and I called him out on it, and I feel really bad about it. And, you know, he's like, hey, you know, it happens sometimes, you know, and if you feel like you've done something wrong, clean it up, right? Make an amends. So I reached out to the person, and I said, I'm really sorry. I apologize. I shouldn't have said anything. You know, I don't want to think I'm paranoid. I'm really not paranoid, but, you know, some little bell or whistle went off at that moment. And then, you know, hey, I shouldn't have said anything. I apologize. No problem. No big deal. I love you. Like my brother. I was like, cool. All right. Peace. See you tomorrow. Whatever. Next day comes along. They're MIA. MIA. And like I said, I'm going to try to keep this pretty anonymous. But things, the wheels of the day were turning, and there were parts of the day that weren't showing up. And you know what that left with me? That left me with having conversations, right, about this kind of thing. Another fucking test of old Tomer, right? You know, people, we're so-and-so. And I'm like, oh, don't know. Restraint from pen and tongue. Because that was a perfect opportunity to let both guns fire, right? But I didn't. Just kept my mouth shut. Turns out I was completely right. This person was absolutely drinking. This person was on an absolute bender. And this person's life became fucking unmanageable to a whole lot of people. Me, other people around in this person's life, all of a sudden they're missing. Phone calls are being made. Time out of people's day is being taken to figure out this person's problem. It's a whole thing. And then all of a sudden, out of the blue, I could tell you that this person, I'm going to say 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 people were affected by this person's behavior. Eight people's lives became this person's life became unmanageable to eight different people. I never thought about that one back in the day. You know, my life was my life. All I thought about, you know, sometimes I run in the mornings and, you know, I don't wear my glasses. Because when I don't wear my glasses, it keeps me right in the moment. I don't wear my glasses because I get sweaty and it's a fucking mess and it's a pain in the ass. So I just, some days I just don't bring them. Just depends on the type of weather. But one of the things that I notice is that when I don't run with glasses, I tend to stay in the moment, right? And, you know, this was one of those things. I don't know. It was just, it's hard to share the story because, like I said, I don't want to, it's not, it wouldn't do anybody any good to, you know, to tell this person who it was. But, I don't know. It's just crazy. And, you know, like I said, you know, when I run without glasses because it keeps me in the moment. It keeps me focused. It keeps me in my square. Well, that's how my addiction was. I didn't think about it. I only focused on just the things around me, how I was going to improve my life, what I could get. I didn't care about anybody else's feelings. I never even considered anybody else's feelings. I never worried about my parents. I never worried about my employers. I never worried about the friends. You know, I didn't care. And this person just did not care. And so eight people were affected by this person's fucking unmanageability. And then all of a sudden, then the person shows back up. They find them. And just as we had suspected, they'd been on a fucking bender. And then I get the text, you know, where can we put this person? Now I'm fucking dealing with this even more. And I was like, I wouldn't do a damn thing. I would not do a damn thing. This is the point where you have to stop being the audience. Right? This is the point where you have to stop trying to fix them. I'll never forget, man, my brother, my brother probably wouldn't care if I shared this story, but my brother and I both suffered from serious, you know, issues. And I got sober before him, but at the end of his addiction, he was in a fucking bad way. And the last audience member that he had in his audience was my father. My mother had said no. And my dad was his last audience member. And as long as you have one audience member, that's the connection that allows you to be an addict, or at least allows you to have the behavior of an addict. And, you know, my dad would support my brother. He felt bad. It's weird. And I think it's maybe generational or whatever, but, you know, my dad loves to talk about the past. And he made excuses back then, and he still makes excuses. Oh, your brother had a lot of issues. I'm like, Dad. But, you know, it's his deal, and I'm not, you know. We're done with all that. We've all moved through it. Luckily today, we all are sober today, and that's great. But, you know, back in those days, you know, he was our audience. And this person had an eight-person audience yesterday because we were all in it trying to figure out how to fix it. And the person said, where should we put him? And I said, I wouldn't put him anywhere. I'd tell him, listen, it's not my problem. You need to stop fixing these people. And that was the thing. I told my dad, you need to let go. And it's painful. And my mom had pretty much let go of my brother. She'd had it, you know. My parents were fighting between themselves over my brother, right? You know, your life becomes so unmanageable. Now people are fighting amongst themselves over your fucking unmanageability. And that's what was going on. My parents, they couldn't talk about my brother. My dad, my mom had enough. My dad was secretly, right? Secretly, because that's what ends up happening, right? You secretly help them out. And when you're helping somebody like that, you got to take a hard look at the little feelings that you're making for yourself. Because a lot of that shit is self, right? It's ego, like, I can fix them. Let me do this. Let me help. And this person reached out to me, you know, yesterday and said, what can we do with this person? And there was a, for a flinch second, I said, you know, how about Dover Behavior and Health? You know, I started naming, I started naming things off, and then I said, you know what? I wouldn't do anything. You can't stay here. Have a nice day. And that was basically what my father told my brother however many years ago. And he was at the front porch. He had wrecked my another one of my father's vehicles and it was arrested and showed up at my parents' front door, banging on the door. I need help. I'm ready. And I said, you can't. My dad's calling me. What am I going to do? What do I do? I said, don't answer the door. We love you. We cannot help you. Goodbye. You can write me a letter in a year. Don't call me. Complete cutoff. And my brother laid out in the front yard, and cried, got up, and walked off into the sunset, and got sober. The audience was over. The show was over. Curtains had closed. The show was over, brother. And like most alcoholics, most self-centered fucking assholes with a deficiency in humility, they go, oh. And then they become ready. And that's what I hope this happens to this person. Don't do anything for them. Don't even give them a fucking ride. Walk. It's such an imbalance that it's almost, it requires, and people are like, oh my God, that's so mean. Fuck them. You know, I love when people get upset when you put your foot down over an addict. So mean. They need help. They're the most self-centered fucking assholes you'll ever meet in your entire life, and they'll take and take and take from you and from until there's no other opportunities. This person that over the last day or so that we've been dealing with this shit has lied to me over and over. Have you been drinking? No. I thought you were sober. I am. No, you're not. Lie, lie, lie. And I'm not going to get into too many details, but a lot of lies were told to me. And, you know, it also is an opportunity as a person that's sober to try to figure out, you know, because you can say, you know, people that lie to me, I'll never forgive them. No. Because this is the part of my side of the life of being sober that I love. It's the serenity, you know. I understand what's going on. I get it. I know it's not personal. Casualties of war, right? That's what I used to call all that shit. I remember when I got sober and I had to make those amends and I had to creep across the land looking for all the people that I had, you know, upset or hurt. At some point, I just had to have a giant category of folks and just call them casualties of war. interesting. Show, give me a priest to fix my life. Interesting line. Yeah, I don't know. It's been, I'm not shocked. I'm not surprised. I mean, I think there is a lot of folks out there that are struggling. You know, I'm not drinking, not drugging, but I'm struggling. You know, the things struggle. There's other things to struggle with. Personalities, you know, opinions, you know, not minding my own business. Fucking sticking my nose where it doesn't belong. And it's gradual. It's subtle, right? You know, just listening. I went to Wawa last night. Kids are like, we need snacks. I was like, all right. Went to the, down to Wawa, and I don't, you know, I'm sure it's in every town, right? It's the convenience store, the 7-Eleven, the Wawa, the, the what is it, Royal Farms, whatever it is, Allsup's, if you're in Albuquerque. You know, you go there, and I was leaving, and you know, everyone's holding the door for each other. There's like one door, there's two doors to get in the place, and there's one group holding one door, another group holding another door, and it's just a whole lot of door holding, right? A lot of happy people, right? And I was walking out, and the guy was holding the door for me, and I said, we're all so nice all of a sudden. He goes, yeah. He goes, you got to love Wawa. You know, we'll break our arm trying to hold the door for each other, but then we run each other in the parking lot. I thought that was pretty funny. Because that's true. You know, we can't get in the damn place fast enough. Can't get out of the damn place fast enough. We lose all of our patience, all of our politeness in the parking lot. But at the door, you know, we're, how you doing? Come on in. Let me hold the door. I'm holding one door with one leg, another with an arm. It's just, it's insane. And I guess the message for me for that was like, you know, we got to be kind all the time, right? You know, in the parking lot and at the door. And, you know, a situation like that I've been going through with this person, you know, it's a good opportunity to get up on my high horse and listen, you drunk. Pull your head out of your ass, fool. No. I've been there. I know this person this morning is going, and I've said it before, and I'll say it again. Nothing changes a life like shame and guilt. And I'm sure that this person right now is in a full bath right to the edge of shame and guilt. 100 ideas of what's going to change this person's life. No more drinking, right? Meeting, something. I can see the powwow now. Because unfortunately, family members, right? Unfortunately, we love these people and we can't give up on them. We can't. We can keep helping them. It's the worst thing we can do. It's like life, sort of. If it feels good, it's probably bad. And if it feels bad, it's really good. And I think that unfortunately, is what this person needs. It's a whole lot of feeling bad. And if the family members can be strong and say no, maybe there's a chance, right? There is a miracle. There is a magical moment when a family finally gives up on a person. And it doesn't need to look in the, you know, in the same looks, the same kind of like an intervention. Doesn't need to look like an intervention. It doesn't need, it's called get the fuck out. And like I told my dad to tell my brother, I don't care that you get sober anymore, okay? I don't care. I don't want to hear your anniversary. I don't want to hear your fucking coins. I don't want to hear how many days you fucking have. I don't care anymore. I want you off the fucking property or I'm calling the fucking cops. You want to send me a letter in a year? Hey, I got sober. Congratulations. You can send it. Don't expect a reply. I'm done with you. Oh, it's serious this time. It's I guess the 1577th time is serious. Right? Because we push it. We push it and push it. The no, you know, I remember when I was, you know, bouncing around in my addiction, and I remember when my parents sent me to a rehab. You know, it had gotten that bad, right? It we had fucked around and argued about it, and I had lied enough, and they finally got to a point, a breaking point, right? The breaking point was I was going to be sent to a rehab. I still have a chance. You know, these were all like, you know, you get forced into the corner, and then the fucking corner finally gives, bleh, and then it's like rehab. Or it's another, I mean, I went to three rehabs. All short term. Four rehabs I went to. And I remember the first one, and, you know, my parents had it, right? I was smoking pot and ditching school and hanging out with my girlfriend. And they'd had it, right? Little did they know it was going to get much worse. But they'd finally had it. And so finally they sent me to rehab. Ugh. But this is the moment. You know, rehab isn't a solution anymore. You know? Helping you get to meetings isn't a solution for us anymore. Your life has become now so unmanageable, we just don't want to be a part of it at all. And, you know, maybe there was a conversation like, listen, we can't be a part of your life unless you get sober, and then they show up a couple days later and they're sober, and then you start letting them back in. You can't even do that. I remember when my brother, you know, and this is how it was. Don't call us. We've given you 50 years or 48 years at the time, I think, of our lives, of our time. We're done. Goodbye. And, you know, my brother split, and he ended up in a halfway house and sober living and got better. But, you know, it wasn't probably a month. And then he started calling. And they start calling with other questions like, what's my insurance? You know, what's my SSI? I need to get my teeth fixed. And as a parent, you're like, you want to get involved. You want to help. You can't. Because, and my dad, you know, my dad started helping him again. And sure enough, my brother, an addict just like me, he started reverting back into that same behavior. Creating situations that my father had to start thinking about. And, you know, it's like, oh, you're getting sober. Good for you. All right, next. Oh, you didn't get so you're drunky? No, sorry to hear about that. Good for you. Bye-bye. You know, I don't want to spend a lot of effort, right? And that was my biggest argument or biggest issue I had with my brother and father was, my dad's getting old, brother, stop fucking with him. Let him fucking just have the rest of his life to have some peace. Get away from him. And my brother went away from him, and my parents found peace. And then, you know, but they come back as a, you know, a fox, or what is it, the wolf with the sheep's clothing. You know, he comes back. Look, I'm doing better. And my parents, you know, that's the role they've gotten into, that, you know, the audience. Sometimes we don't know how to do anything other than be in an audience, right? Some of this, that's why we have Alan on. Some of us fall into this position of fixing. And it's our role. That's a whole different conversation. But, you know, and he got back, and it's, they're both sick. My dad was sick and my brother was sick. Listen, if you're sick, you're probably surrounded by sick fucking people. Sorry to say that, sick people, but, you know, sick people attract sick people. And maybe they're not drinking, but fucking helping you, there's a sickness to it. So everybody has to get better. But when my brother showed back up and my dad started going back into it, I said, you can't do it, Dad. You can't do it. And now, you know, everybody's found their happy medium. My brother's doing very well. He's got a great job. He's sober. You know, still, you know, I honestly stay out of it. Everybody seems happy. My dad's happy. My brother's happy. Everybody's good. But, you know, it was tough. It was definitely tough. Can we read something real quick? I know I've gone over again. Daily Reflections. Let's see if I can fucking butcher this real quick. A butcher. Then I got to go to work. All right. Let's see. June 12th. Forming True Partnerships. Here we go. But it is from our twisted relations with family, friends, and society at large that many of us have suffered the most. We have been especially stupid and stubborn about them. The primary fact that we fail to recognize is our total inability to form a true partnership with another human being. Interesting. That's 12 steps and 12 traditions, page 53. Can those words apply to me? Am I still unable to form a true partnership with another human being? What a terrible handicap that would be for me to carry into my sober life. In my sobriety, I will mediate and pray to discover how I may be trusted, how I may be a trusted friend and companion. Yeah, that's, I think that's just time. It's just time. Time takes time. Relationships take time. Good behavior takes time. It's all time. I hope everyone has a great day. Hang in there. Meetings are opening up. Let's get back to going to meetings. Thanks for letting me share.